You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 290 of the World's Most Dangerous Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. With me this week, the Godfather, Bill Lack. How are you today, Bill?
Good.
The Red season ended unceremoniously, and it was a difficult season.
It did.
It was difficult.
Is the season over?
It is for some teams, like the Milwaukee Brewers and the Cincinnati Reds. And it was a difficult season, as I was saying, but I guess you could make an argument. There was some progress. There were some positives. But I expected the season ended and maybe we'll get a breather here. Watch some playoff baseball and get a little bit of a breather. But instead, we had more Reds news this week than we've had in a long time. Did that to help launch you into hot stove league mode, Bill?
I don't know about hot stove league, but it's interesting that it seems to be that the transformation – that was started last winter by the front office seems to be continuing.
Yeah. What we can say is that we've said several times in our conversations that we have been encouraged by the decisions that have been made by the current front office that we would not have seen in past years. And that we just saw a week full of that, didn't we?
That's a good thing.
It's a great thing. So let's try to run through some of the news from the week and we'll talk about that as much as we can. The first thing that it was earlier this week, the Reds announced that Terry Reynolds is leaving the organization. He's going to become the president of the Florida State League, and he's the Reds' he's a special assistant to the GM. He'd been with the Reds organization for more than a decade. He was the director of amateur scouting and then director of player development, and then got moved out of that role. He was replaced, and I don't know. Somehow people stick around in the Reds organization, but he's gone for good, but... and wish him the best of luck. But then along with that news came about the news that the Reds were making wholesale changes in the minor league coaching staff. And a bunch of guys, Milt Thompson, who's the minor league hitting coordinator, Billy Hatcher, outfield base running coordinator, they're gone. Of course, Milt Thompson been around for 3 years. Billy Hatcher has been with the Reds on the coaching staff for more than a decade. And then, of course, a popular player. Also, AAA manager Jody Davis not returning. AAA pitching coach Jeff Facero.
Danny Darwin,
the AA pitching coach, not returning. And to me, it's really interesting that the hitting coordinator, minor league hitting coordinator, and two of the top two pitching coaches at the top minor league levels are out. What were your thoughts about these moves? Anything in particular? Billy Hatcher or any of these guys?
Well, and you say it all the time. You feel bad for anybody that loses their job. But the one thing you know about baseball is they'll always find a job somewhere. It's interesting to me that these guys, I guess, were the way I see it, at least on the pitching side, were given this season to kind of come in line with what the new plan is or what the new philosophy is. and you would assume that they didn't seem to fit, be a good fit, and that's why these changes were made. That's the way I would see it.
I think that's a very fair analysis.
I think it'll be interesting to see what happens on the hitting side.
And we'll talk more about that hitting in a moment because there are other news on that front. Yep. But with the pitching, I think that analysis is exactly the way I took it. And we don't really have anything other than just the public statements right now. But the Reds were very, very public the past off season and then all this year about the new way that Derek Johnson, the Reds pitching coach, was going to be sort of molding the pitching top to bottom in the organization. And I just don't know that there's any other way that you can interpret the AAA and AA pitching coaches, Jeff Fassero and Danny Darwin, both former major leaguers, not returning for 2020, than this sort of the continued molding and shaping of the Reds pitching by Derek Johnson. And we'll probably come back to that in a minute because the Reds made another interesting hire on that front. But first, let's go back over to the hitting because, let's have a requiem for Billy Hatcher, I guess, here. You know, everyone is going to always remember Billy Hatcher fondly. You know, that 1990 World Series, Billy Hatcher. I remember him celebrating.
Does he still hold the consecutive hit record?
As far as I know, who
knows? For the World Series?
I don't know. The Reds haven't been back in the World Series. I haven't watched one since 1990. So I don't know. Milt Thompson, the minor league hitting coordinator, out. And also, this was the most surprising news of the week to me. The Reds announced a couple days ago that hitting coach Turner Ward is out after one season. They've not yet named a replacement for the major league hitting coach. And this blew me away in some ways because it's not something the Reds would have done before. And this is something that Jason and I talked about on the podcast last week because I think a question was asked. Do you think Turner Ward should be gone? And I said, well, no, I don't think he should be gone. I think you should give him some more time. He had a good reputation coming in. But the other side of that was that I said, I don't think that the Reds will get rid of him. I think they made a commitment to him last year. And I guess the way I would frame a question to you, Bill, is are you surprised that the Reds cut bait on Turner Ward after just 1 year? Because he was part of the big remolding of the system last year.
You and I talked about this a little bit a couple of weeks ago. I kind of put that same question to you as to whether you thought they might, make a change. And you said what you said. You didn't think they would. Am I surprised? Yeah, very much so, because you have to believe it was that he came here under more than a one-year deal. So they're eating some money, I would have to believe, on this, which, again, shows a difference in this team's philosophy. The other thing is, and I said this on Twitter, I wonder whether this is a knee-jerk reaction to the Reds or this guy's just getting the blame for having to try to coach a bunch of bad hitters.
It's a good question, and I think maybe if you interpret a little bit of what David Bell, Reds manager David Bell, said about it, I thought it was really fascinating. And here are the quotes. I've got them in front of us. As an organization and a major league team, we're at the point where we need a clear plan for the aligning of our offensive approach. We identified that we weren't where we needed to be with that. It was, it was more just philosophical in nature and having a clear plan in place for our team and our organization from an offensive standpoint. So it sounds to me like they want a guy like Derek Johnson to take over the hitting. And when you look at Milt Thompson being relieved of his duties as well in the minor leagues, it sounds to me like they want something like Derek Johnson doing on the pitching side and that they just did not see Turner Ward accomplishing that. I thought those were interesting comments.
Yeah, it does sound like they want an organizational a guy to kind of be the organizational wide guy, or at least somebody that can help implement an organizational wide philosophy. And this isn't the first time the Reds have tried to do an organizational wide philosophy. We remember a few years ago when you had to take the first strike. At least they were doing that at Dayton. And it was a disaster, and hopefully it won't be anything that radical or goofy. But you know, we've talked for years about an organizational philosophy on both sides, you know, either offensively and pitching wise. And I think it was Chris Welsh that was telling us that this year in spring training was the first time they started having these morning meetings.
Yeah,
we're going over the philosophy and trying to keep things, you know, things all on one page. And I think that was the first time he said he'd seen it in this organization, if my memory is correct.
Yeah. And, you know, I hesitate to put too much of performance on a hitting coach for major leaguers, you know, once you get to the major leagues, you know, you kind of know how to hit, you would think. But someone made a point this week that I thought was interesting. I'd like to know what you think about it. Is if you think about all the different players, Joey Votto, Nick Senzel, Jesse Winker, Tucker Barnhart, who during the middle of the season kind of played with their stances and hitting approaches, it was kind of like a work in progress for a bunch of guys. And you wonder how much of that was Turner Ward responsible for, and how much of it was leads into this aligning of our offensive approach that David Bell talked about, that having a clear plan in place. I thought that was an interesting point.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thought, and you do have to wonder, because I don't remember in any time in my memory so many guys trying so many different things. Of course, all the guys that we're talking about were struggling, so you would hope they're trying something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so whether it was Turner Ward, whether it was the fact that offensively this team was flat as a pancake, and so many guys on this team were struggling, that they were trying new things or going to the hitting coach and saying, what can I try to get out of this slump? Who knows?
Yeah. I would love to know some of the internal conversations, obviously, and we don't know those. But
one of those fly on the wall things.
Yeah, but I will say that I was extremely surprised that they went ahead and cut bait, just given that they had just brought him in, and it's sort of a celebrated move when they brought him in. I mean, it wasn't necessarily as celebrated as Derek Johnson's hiring, but you know, the Dodgers wanted to keep Turner Ward. He'd been there for 3 years. They didn't want to lose him. They made an offer to try to keep him. So I mean, it was a big deal when they brought him on, and just to see them cut bait so quickly shows that they understand that maybe maybe it signals a little bit of urgency on behalf of the front office.
Or at the very least, that they have a plan, and this didn't adhere to the plan.
Right. Which would be the first time in a long time they've had a plan, right?
Well, at least that we know about.
Well, right. That was visible on the surface. Now, to me, that was the most surprising move of the week, was Turner Ward. But to me, by far, the most exciting news of the week was a hire that the Reds made. And it's a guy named Kyle Bodie. And a lot of you are going to be familiar with him. Some of you may not. He was hired as the Reds' Director of Pitching Initiatives / Pitching Coordinator. Now, Bodie is a really interesting guy. He's the founder and owner of this place called Driveline Baseball. It's a data-driven baseball performance center up in the Pacific Northwest that a bunch of big leaguers go to and train there. And he's a really interesting kind of guy. He read Moneyball when it came out, and that got him interested. I mean, he pitched a little bit in high school, and I think he may have pitched a little for a year maybe at some D3 school in college, but it got him really interested in researching and testing player development methods. And so he started a blog, and it became Driveline Baseball, this place where he uses high-speed cameras and sensors. And Trevor Bauer's one of his acolytes out there, but a bunch of big leaguers go out there, and he's been a consultant for.
So
a bunch
we do better than that.
Well, I agree, but he's been a consultant for a bunch of teams, and the news came out that a bunch of teams, specifically, we know that the Cubs tried to hire Bodie this year, and the Mets did, and Bodie essentially said that he came to the Reds because, first of all, he's going to work almost entirely in the minor leagues, and that he picked the Reds over the other options. It's the first time he's ever done it. He said, quote, "I had a lot of interest and multiple offers. The direction the Reds are going blew me away. Throughout the 2 months of interviewing, the Reds opportunity just felt right. It's time to get to work," basically. So, I mean, this is a guy with an extremely high people have an extremely high opinion of this guy within baseball, and the methods that he uses to, you know, increase velocity and to work with pitchers on spin rate, things like that. So again, this is a serious investment into this organization, and probably overdue, but I don't know. Were you as excited about that as I was?
I'll be honest. I didn't know as much about this guy. I've just learned a bunch just listening to you talk. But reading on Twitter and from people that I respect, it does sound like a very, very exciting thing. And let's be honest, developing pitching has been a problem in this organization for a long, long time. So, you know, hopefully we're going to start seeing young pitchers coming up that are difference makers, that, you know, and in bulk, we would hope.
Well, you would hope. You would absolutely hope. So the Reds, and this, again, this seems like part of Derek Johnson's plan to transform top to bottom the Reds pitching in the entire organization. Caleb Cotham, who's the assistant pitching coach, who's been been promoted, actually. He was assistant pitching coach this past year. He's still going to remain assistant pitching coach, but he's also the Reds' director of pitching. He has that new title. Cotham was a guy who was an early adopter before he got injured and his career essentially ended, but he was a driveline guy, and it got him to the big leagues, basically. He was sort of floundering in the minors, and it helped him get to the big leagues. So, you know, these are all, to me, incredibly, incredibly exciting moves. Be really interesting to see what direction they go with the hit with the hitting coach. I don't have any idea who it might be, but I don't know. Like you said, this is more pieces that are coming to light, I guess, of the plan that they have. And to me, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, for the off season, I mean, the only thing could be, you know, they could top this is if they went out and signed some big name guys.
You're exactly right. And to that point, before we get to that point, I guess for the first week of the off season for us, as disappointed as everyone was with the way the season ended, they at least are doing some things that make us think, okay, we've been saying for a while anyway that it's going to be one of the most interesting off seasons that we've ever seen in Cincinnati, or it should be. If it's not, they're wasting an opportunity. But there's some evidence that, oh, already they're not wasting any time here. So the other big news of the week was Dick Williams, president of baseball operations. Dick Williams had some interesting quotes. He did some interviews this week, and he said specifically, we will have a bigger payroll. We will have money to spend. It will be a nice increase. Now, I had actually heard from some off-the-record sources that was actually the case, but couldn't report that, so I'm glad he's saying that publicly. But what do you make of that? There will be a nice increase in payroll. Do you believe it?
Oh, I believe it'll increase. I think I'm from Missouri, so we'll have to see whether his idea of nice and my idea of nice is the same thing.
Yeah, because what concerned me about the conversations that he had, and he did say that they intend to dip into the free agent market, but he pretty quickly qualified with the small market nonsense.
Yeah, there you go.
They've been peddling that small market nonsense to us for years. And the one time when they're trying to do, I'm sure these interviews are designed to help get the fan base excited a little bit that the Reds are going to spend, they're going to be active this year, but they dropped that caveat in there. How much does that concern you?
A lot.
It's a crutch, right?
It's time to go big or go home. And I mean that for the fans. You know, if the Reds aren't going to go big, and you've been banging on this drum for a while, you know, why should we continue to follow this team? And if they're gonna make excuses year after year, now, you know, we can point at the Oakland A's and at the Tampa Bay and say, you know, well, they're wonderful franchises. They're getting by on a nothing budget and are successful every year. But our franchise hasn't been able to do that.
Yeah, frankly, it's been mismanagement in Cincinnati compared to those organizations, and so. I've also said that I do think that Dick Williams and Nick Kroll and the group that's in place now are in a better position to make the right types of decisions that we want to see made. But the previous mismanagement has kind of put them behind the eight ball a little bit. But you're right. They don't have the benefit of time. They can't rebuild here. It's do it now or whatever. I'll go follow. Well, not the Bengals. Nobody wants to follow them.
God, no.
They're doing pretty well, though, right? Who's won more?
No.
Who's won more games in the month of September? I guess we're
almost
October.
Everybody.
Then the Reds or the Bengals? It was pretty close.
In October, they're the same. In September, the Reds did.
Yeah, that's right. the small market thing. They've been feeding that line to us for years and years and years as an excuse for why they're not going to go sign anyone, and I don't buy it. look at the Milwaukee Brewers. Somehow they figured out how to sign players. You know, the Reds, look at the Cardinals. And you can say, well, the Cardinals' attendance is through the roof and all that. But you know what? The reason the Cardinals' attendance is through the roof is because they win every year.
They win.
When you win, people come. And so,
in the immortal words of Al Davis, just win, baby.
Just win, baby. Yeah, so to me, it's always been this poor mouthing and kind of anti-marketing that we're small market, we can't win. And you got a fan base now that every time you suggest that the Reds go sign someone, the Cincinnati Reds are a $1 billion corporation. They're making money hand over fist, and they don't open their books, so we don't know exactly how much, but they're getting all this MLB advanced media money, the TV money. They've got money coming in, and again, a $1 billion corporation. But every time you suggest they go sign someone, be a legitimate player on the free agent market, you'll get 100 fans say, the Reds can't do that. The Reds don't have enough money to do that. And the only reason people say that is because the Reds have, over a course of years, in order to save some money, so they didn't have to spend it, they've convinced us that they can't. And I think it's ludicrous. And I used to buy it, and I just think it's ludicrous now, just looking at the numbers. I don't know what the number is where they have to be in terms of payroll, but you know, somebody, Anthony Rendon is the guy we talked about a lot as a guy that I really want the Reds to get. And the Nationals made a big time 7-year, $210 million offer or something crazy like that. And everybody was like, well, the Reds are out. And I'm like, no, why? Why should we give up on that? The Reds should offer more. He can help the Reds. Only if you are going to take it as a given that they can't spend, that's the only situation under which you should let them off the hook. All right, my rant's over. What do you have to add to that?
Well, the only thing I would say in opposition to that, and it's not about the money. It's, with me, it's more about the years.
Okay, but
I would struggle for those really, really. But if that's going to be the only way you're going to get these guys, I mean, that's just, it's kind of, you know, it's like the way the game is played now. Well, and that's fine. You know, I've got problems with the way the game is played now too. I miss the stolen base. But railing about it doesn't make any difference. It is what it is, and it's the same thing with the contracts. If you're going to be competitive, you're going to have to write 7-year deals, whether you like it or not, for marquee players.
And yeah, you said the thing I was going to say. That's the market value.
Yep, and that's you know, is it going to hamstring you at the other end? Probably.
Okay.
And you know, but you know, the value of the contract at the other end is going to be bad. But you know, if you can bring a world championship in, how much money is that worth?
Yeah, I just think that's the market value. If you're going to say we can't sign somebody that long, then you might as well just say we're not going to sign anyone, or at least anyone that is an impact player. You can get Jose Iglesias for less than 7 years. I just, you're going to have to overpay. That's what the free agent market's about. You know, it's not been the last 2 years. It'd be nice if we had another year where there was collusion and the free agents were, you know, underpriced and the Reds could snatch up somebody. But looking at what Rendon's been offering.
But they weren't underpriced for the marquee guys. The marquee guys got the big money.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. That's a very good point. The Bryce Harpers and the Manny Machados.
I think what we're talking about is the guys that were right below that marquee level who in the past were making big money, and now the teams are going, well, wait a minute, you know, maybe, you know, they're not worth that kind of money. They're not difference makers. They're not, you know, Bryce Harper or whoever, you know, you want to talk about.
You're absolutely 100% right. I think that's a great point. I think that the marquee guys, and those are the guys that are going to move the needle for the Reds. I mean, you know, the Reds should have invested in Manny Machado last year. They may have not been able to get him. I'd like to live in San Diego too. But that's a guy that would have moved the needle. This year, you know, it's Rendon and on the free agent market. I'm not sure who else really truly moves it that much. Yasmani Grandal, who is now going to be a free agent since the Brewers have been eliminated unceremoniously from the playoffs. He's going to be a free agent, and there was a Yes, from John Heyman, this guy who, you know, you never know what to believe from that guy. He likes to listen to himself talk, but he did say the Reds are going to intend to make an offer to Yasmani Grandal, and, you know, that's a big upgrade. But I don't know. It can't be just him. Why not Rendon? I mean, really. Overpay for the guy. Although I do fear that the Nationals are going to really crazy overpay for him as a, you know, unless they decide to really tear it down. But because they let Harper get away last year, that they may overpay for Rendon.
I agree with that. I don't think they're gonna let the best player on their team walk away 2 years in a row.
We'll see. They may decide to just tear it down and start over because, of course, then again, they may make a run in this postseason. That'll change what they do because they're still alive. So I don't know. Going to be interesting. I did think it was interesting that the Reds said that that Dick Williams said, yeah, we're gonna spend more money. He also said, there's another good quote that I wanted to talk about. He talked about getting more guys that could get on base because the offense needed to be upgraded. And he said that, specifically said they want to upgrade offensively in the outfield. And the quote was this: I think we have the potential to have three everyday outfielders in Winker, Senzel, and Aquino, but we cannot go into next year counting on all three of them to be everyday guys. It just isn't going to be that easy. We have to create more impact in that group and still give these guys the opportunity to play their way into everyday roles or complementary roles, but the outfield area is one we'd be looking to supplement. So that's kind of saying what I said in my last piece for Cincinnati Magazine of the season, which is that you know, if you go into the season with the same outfield, you're in trouble because unless you seriously upgraded elsewhere, because you know, counting on all those guys, you have to count on them to both stay healthy and to improve, and I think that's a fool's game. Like I always say, hope is not a strategy. Were you surprised that he specifically mentioned those guys and the outfield as a place to upgrade?
I think it shows that they're thinking about all the positions other than probably first and third to upgrade. And you know, we've talked about. I don't believe Winker will be with this team on opening day next year.
You've said that.
I'm a Jesse Winker guy.
Yeah.
It's just a feeling I have. And if they're talking about him as an everyday guy, I think that's a fool's errand. I think he just can't hit left-handed pitching. Now, Jason and you and I, and I've, you know, so many people have rang the bell for a platoon in left. You know, sure, I'd like to get somebody better, but, you know, I wouldn't have a problem with Winker and Irvin platooning in left field. But again, you got to stay healthy. Winker has the last 2 years hasn't been able to stay healthy.
Yeah, so you're hoping that Irvin's season this year is real and that Winker can stay healthy, and then you're hoping that Aquino doesn't flame out. And that's just way too much.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed for me. That's way too big of a gamble. Now, the next part, we talk about Senzel in center. John Heyman, again, he reported, quote, the Mets and the Reds this winter will both be in the market for a center fielder. And you wonder whether there's any basis at all in his reports ever, because sometimes you just never know with this guy. But if there's some source there that says the Reds are going to be active in the market for a center fielder, makes you wonder if the Reds are thinking about moving Senzel back to second base permanently as a way to resolve the second base position and maybe to resolve his injury issues. So, would it surprise you
except the year before he broke his finger playing second base?
Yeah, that was kind of a fluke play. You'd think maybe with the shoulder issue, that getting him back into the infield where he's not making those long throws might protect his shoulder more. That's the only thing I can think of. The other thing was a ball that just took a bad hop.
The other thing you hope is that they haven't soured on Senzel.
Oh, there's no way. They can't. I don't think they can't just because of public relations, but it would be silly to do that.
I don't disagree, but it wouldn't be the wackiest thing this team's ever done.
I think it would be, considering the decision makers right now. I think there's no chance of that, but that's an interesting thought that I didn't want to think about.
I didn't say I believe that, but I said it's something that you have to think about.
Yeah. Okay. I just thought about it. I'm going to put it out of my mind now.
Okay. You don't want to think about it.
I don't want to think about it. there was a suggestion because the Red Sox are whining about their payroll now, and there's a discussion that Mookie Betts might be on. Now, he didn't play much center field, if any at all, this year, Mookie Betts, he did post almost 7 wins above replacement. But only available for, he has 1 more year of arbitration left, and he'll make 20-some million in arbitration. What would you think about the Reds trying to put together a package to trade for Mookie Betts for one season?
I can't imagine that we'd have enough.
I think we'd have enough, but I don't think we'd have enough to get anybody else.
And he played 17 games in center field this year.
He did this year. Okay, good.
Yeah. He's okay. He's a pretty good player. I mean,
yeah. Dating back to
we'd take him if we could get him, you know. We'd find a place for him to play.
No doubt. You probably have to empty out what you've got in terms of prospect capital, and you only have him for 1 year if you can't re-sign him. But then again, dating back to 2015, there's one player in baseball that has more wins above replacement than Mookie Betts. And I think you know who that one player is.
Is that a young man out in California?
No, it's Luis Alberto. No, it's Mike Trout, obviously. So that's a question that I would hate to give up what it would take to get him. Although if just 1 year of him, it's not going to be as much as if there were 3 years of him. But I would hate to, because it's going to take... It's going to be a big hit, and the Reds probably don't have enough prospect capital to get anyone else in trade that can move the needle, as I say, if they did that. But, man, can you imagine Mookie Betts in this lineup next year? Oh, my goodness.
Well, the other thing, you know, would be really nice is if they could bring him over and sign an extension at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. I would be surprised if Betts would do that. It'd be his first time hitting the free agency. The free agent market.
And he made $20 million this year.
Yeah. And so he's liable to get a big time payday. And I don't see him being, yeah. I mean, he could resign with the Reds after that year, but I would be surprised if he did it without testing the market first. So it's a gamble.
He's only 26.
What about you trade for Mookie Betts? You sign Yasmani Grandal and let's roll. What do you think about that? That gives you.
Move
Senzel to second, so you got Votto, Senzel, Suarez, Freddie Galvis, or whoever at short. You have Winker, Irvin,
Grandal,
Betts, and Aquino in the outfield, and Grandal behind the plate. I think that's a team that gets it done. I really do. Or how about this?
So you really think they're one big bat away?
No, two. Well, one big bat and another pretty good one. How about trade for Mookie Betts and sign Anthony Rendon and start printing World Series tickets?
It'd be fun.
It would be fun. 1 year of Betts would be fun, but you know you're going to have to give up guys like Lodolo and guys like Jonathan India, who I don't really. There's no one in the Reds minor league system right now that I would have any heartburn losing, to be honest. But Tyler Stevenson and guys like that. Tyler Stevenson's the guy I'm highest on in the Reds minor leagues, but you'd have to give up a bunch of these guys. And I don't know. I just, it really intrigues me to have a hitter the quality of Mookie Betts in the Reds lineup. I don't see it happening. So,
would you do something like, and I would think this would be the deal that you'd have to make. It would have to be one or two guys off the 25 man. That are cheap and young and pretty good, and some minor league guys. I think it'd be like Senzel and somebody else and minor league guys for somebody like Betts.
I don't think maybe some major league guys, but I don't think Senzel's in there. I don't think there's any way they trade Senzel. He's the only prospect that's come out of their organization that's actually made it. I think Lodolo in India, I think Hunter Green still has real value. Tyler Stevenson, and then, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe Winker, maybe, you know, somebody like that. I don't know. I'd be interested to know.
I don't think you could get the deal done with what the Reds have in their minor league system. I think you'd have to have cheap, young 25 man roster guys, assuming they're really going to dump salary, you know, will tell on that.
Yeah, maybe. You don't know. It's hard to say. You're probably right, but it's hard to say what the Red Sox really want to get in return. I mean, they can go out and sign cheap major league talent after they clear that, get under the luxury tax. I would say, hey, I'll give you Hunter Green and Jonathan India, and just to see whether they even where they laugh or whether they, you know, come back what they say. That's what I would say. What about Hunter Green and Jonathan India for Mookie Betts? And, you know, they may laugh you out of the room, or they may say, oh, let's talk. What about if you throw in such and such or whatever? I think that's what I would do. That'd be painful, but man, Mookie Betts, he's good, and he's got a cool name. And is that a cooler name than Mookie?
You like the Mookie?
Mookie Blaylock? Is it cooler than Mookie Blaylock? You remember Mookie?
You know what? We could probably get Mookie Wilson.
Mookie Wilson?
We could get, I bet Mookie Wilson would come play for the Reds.
Probably. I would say, you probably get him on a minor league deal, I would think.
Probably.
Yeah.
Maybe even fairly cheap.
Maybe even fairly cheap. So I don't know. It's again, a lot of the stuff we're talking about is, oh, what will happen? What can the Reds do? Now is the time of the year where the Reds have given us a little bit of taste, something to be excited about, but everything's still up in the air. They've still got to go do it. And I don't know. The Reds seem to be intent on making moves. And that's another thing Dick Williams said was, we're playoffs next year is our goal. That's what we're talking about. And how much of that's PR and how much they're actually going to be able to do. But you don't get from losing 90 games in a row, four straight seasons, then moving up to, you know, 75 and 87. You don't get to the playoffs from that point without drastic moves. So what's your confidence level that they're actually going to be able to convert on some of this all-in stuff we're talking about?
Well, here's what I'll say. They said in this offseason they were going to go out and get the pitching. They did that.
They did.
So let's give them credit for that. And until they you know, don't – this front office doesn't keep their word to us, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Now, if we come in next year and we've signed, you know, Dietrich Iglesias type guys and think that this team's going to compete, you know, it's not going to be not so much, you know.
What are you going to say if they sign Jose Iglesias to a 2-year deal to be the starting shortstop?
I'll throw it. What, you mean when I get done throwing up?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't dislike Jose Iglesias, and I know you don't either, and you take quite a bit of abuse about him. But if this team's going to win, we've got to – those aren't the kind of free agents we need to be signing.
No, I mean, unless you're –
To be different players.
Unless you're getting the other big hitters so that you can afford that one black hole in the lineup.
Yeah.
All right. Any other thoughts about off-season and all-in and any of that? It's going to be fun, I think.
Well, the only other thing that occurred to me while we were talking here is all of these changes that we've seen so far, the positive stuff, seems to be on the pitching side. And you know, we hear him talking about a hitting philosophy. I'm interested to see when we start hiring people on the hitting side to see who we hire and how that fills out the organization, and to see what direction that goes in.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think we're going to, I'm really interested to see what they do on the hitting side. And again, not just in terms of players, but the coaching staff. I mean, it's going to be a fascinating, man, this off season is going to be crazy all the way around, I think. One way or the other. I mean, they're going to get us, quit interrupting me. They're going to get us, they have a real chance to get me from being as depressed as I've been in a while about this team. And the next few months, you can see if they seriously get, spend some money, then, you know, they could get me excited pretty easily, I think, is the way I'd put it. So
you are the positive guy. You're the, you know.
I've been optimistic generally, yeah, until recently when it's become clear that they bungled this this rebuild in so many ways. One more thing about the payroll. Let's talk about specific numbers just a little bit. The Reds have said that they're not going to comment on specifics of payroll, but we're going to continue to build and invest in the team, have more financial resources available. Payroll be bigger. The payroll this season was right at $130 million. Okay? And on the books right now, five players, as they've only got five players that already have their salary set for 2020. And that's Joseph Daniel Votto, Sonny Gray, Eugenio Suarez, Roselli Iglesias, and Tucker Barnhart. That's a total of just under $58 million. So a bunch of players hitting arbitration, Trevor Bauer, Anthony DeSclafani, Michael Lorenzen, Kevin Gausman, Derek Dietrich, Jose Peraza, Kurt Casale, Scott Schebler, if you remember that guy, Matt Bowman. So Bauer's going to get a bump, probably, but I don't know if it's going to be a huge bump. He made $13 million this year and had a bad year, so that's not going to go up a whole lot more. DeSclafani could get a pretty good one. Kevin Gausman was almost $10 million this year. I don't know if the Reds are even going to offer him arbitration, but I expect that they will. We'll see. A lot of that's going to depend on Derek Johnson, I'm sure. So, and then Michael Lorenzen's probably going to get a pretty good raise, but he only made $2 million last year, so that's not that bad. So, I don't know. Doug Gray was looking at it at Red Leg Nation, and he said, if you look at this and just sort of make some assumptions on the raises the guys get in arbitration, that puts us at about $110 million before free agency or trades. So, that's $20 million below where they were at the beginning of last season. And the question is, how much higher do you go? But, you know, if you go up to $150 million even, which is really, I think, would be still below average in baseball, that's $40 million to play with. You can get some. And if you go up even more than that, you get a, you know, you can pay a guy $30 million a year, Anthony Rendon. I think the numbers could be there depending on exactly how high it's going to go. So, do you think any of that was... I don't know. Does that make you think the fact that they're at
it makes me hopeful, you know, and what you're saying makes complete sense in what they could do. And at this point, it's just a matter of what they will do. And we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, we're just, it's all if this, then whatever. So, all right. Anyway, a couple other things. Yeah, go ahead.
The other thing I think is going to be interesting that's going to happen after the World Series is we're going to see who they offer arbitration to, who they tender, who they don't, and that kind of thing. My feeling is Peraza's gone, Schebler's gone, Dietrich's gone. And early in the year, I thought Dietrich would be a no-brainer, and he just had shoulder surgery, and you wonder how long that's been bothering him, the way he hit after June. There's a lot of guys out of options. It's going to be a very interesting offseason.
Let's talk about these some guys with options. But first of all, let me say about I think Peraza is a good candidate to be non-tendered. I think Dietrich is going to be offered arbitration. I do. I think that when healthy, he's a really solid, still a solid backup player, but a number of different positions with some power off the bench. I think he's just the same player that we thought he was when he came in. He's not the superstar that some people wanted to think he was early in the year, but. I feel like he's going to be back. It's going to depend on what they think he's going to cost, but I can see how he could help as a bench player on a good team. I think he can help you. But we were talking before we started recording about some of the guys, and there are a number of them that are going to be out of options and have to be added to the 40-man. You want to talk about any of those in particular that interest you? Tyler Stevenson was the one that interested me mostly.
Yeah, I know you talked about Tyler Stevenson. Santillan, I think is how you pronounce his name, the pitcher.
Yeah, Tony Santillan.
He's very highly thought of, and you know we got a lot of pitchers that are out of options that they're going to have to make some decisions on. Gausman, Reed, Sal Romano, Stevenson, a kid named Maya.
Kerry Maya came over in the Mike Leake trade.
Yeah, I think Jackson Stevens is gone. It'll be interesting to see what they do with Sal Romano. And I think it'll be interesting to see what they do with Gausman.
Yeah, I think there's some bloat on the 40-man roster, though, that they have some room. Guys like R.J. Alaniz, you know, some guys you can kind of cut bait on to make some room. You know, and of course, guys are going to be coming off. Alex Wood, you know, not currently signed next year. Juan Graterol's a guy, you know, they could make room. But Peraza is going to be coming, or Iglesias is going to be coming off unless they re-sign him. Galvis, they still have to make a decision whether to pick up his option. So Christian Colon, looks, just looking down the 40-man roster, there's some bloat there, some places to add some guys. But yeah, they're going to have to make some decisions on some of these guys. They absolutely are.
Do you think Galvis is, they would, do you think they're considering not keeping Galvis?
I think so. I think it's going to depend on how they can upgrade the team. They've got some time to make that decision on him. I would not be surprised if they're not at least talking to Jose Iglesias' people. Okay, will you come back cheap? I hope, well, that's okay with him. He and Galvis are essentially the same production level of a player. Galvis is due to make $5.5 million next year under a team option. Yep. So the Reds could, you know, six of one, half dozen the other, as far as I'm concerned there. Iglesias has a better glove. Galvis has a little more pop. I don't, you know, if you're going to have one of those guys at short, okay. You can't have both those guys starting in your middle infield, and you have to make solid upgrades other places if you intend to keep either one of those guys in your lineup. So, I think if I had to bet right now, I would bet on Freddie Galvis being the opening day shortstop next year. I think I've thought about it a little bit over the last week or two. And I believe that's what I would say. Who would you, if you had to bet the ranch on either Freddie Galvis, Jose Iglesias, Jose Peraza, or somebody else being the starting shortstop on opening day next year? Would it be one of those three choices anyone else?
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think it'll probably be Galvis. I think they'll probably be willing to take a little bit of a hit on the defensive side to pick up a little bit of bat. My question is, you know, if it's a $5.5 million option, when do they have to pick up that option?
I think most of the time, isn't it? I believe it's to get to the end of the World Series, maybe, unless there's something else stated in the contract. But I believe that's when free agency officially starts, right? Or whatever the date is that you have to tender arbitration. I'm not sure. So
they would have to commit. They'd have to commit to that $5.5 million before they knew whether they were be able to sign somebody else that would be better.
I guess, yeah. You know, I don't know the specifics of it. And if I'd known you were going to ask that, instead of making me look bad on my own podcast, Bill, I would have done a little bit of research on that point. Or you know, maybe you could have done that research.
I got to keep you on your toes, man.
So I don't know. It's interesting. I don't think either of those are great options, but either of them would be acceptable options depending on the upgrades elsewhere. That's the way I'll put it. So, you also had a point that we talked about a little bit before we came on that I thought your perspective was you were looking at it in a more optimistic fashion than I did when I initially was talking about it. You had some thoughts about the attendance this year.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm looking at my notes here. They had the fifth highest increase in baseball, and they went up almost 9%. In attendance since in 2019. Of course, last year was their lowest number in three decades. But anytime that and they're 19th out of 30 is what I read, what I saw. But anytime you're going up and everybody else is going down, that's pretty good. But I was looking at the attendance numbers, and now I probably won't be able to find it again. For the franchise, and their numbers are higher. They had a higher attendance this year than they did in 1972 when they went to the World Series.
Yeah, but they were overrated that year. They lost the World Series.
Oakland, eh?
Well, that's true around a lot of baseball, especially right at that time. The early 70s was kind of a dark period for baseball. I looked at the attendance and I was like, 1.8 million, essentially. That's among the lowest they've had. Not as bad as last year, which was the lowest they've had since the early 80s, but still this was among the lowest they'd had since the early 80s. But if you look at it in the context that you put it in, which is it was a big increase, and that they were one of the few teams that actually had an increase, because attendance is by and large just down all around baseball. I guess teams are excited to see a big 75 win franchise. It's a little surprising that on the heels of four straight 90 loss seasons, excuse me, and with the team starting 1-8, that they had any increase at all in attendance. So that's a credit to a little bit of the excitement that was generated last offseason. But to me, it's really surprising.
It would be also interesting to see how the attendance per game went from the season. You know, did it peak in May, or was it pretty standard all the way through the season? I mean, you'd have to sit down and do some research to do that. And that would take some time. But, you know, they were 1.8 this year, and, you know, 1970 they were 1.8, but they played half of that year in Crosley Field. And it was still higher than, like, 98 and 97.
When you go back to 1970, we're still talking, and I hate to say it in these terms, but a half a century ago. So, I mean, it's a little bit different playing field. When in terms of the numbers of people that live within commuting distance to the ballpark. So I don't know what it is specifically, but yeah, it would be interesting to know.
I would turn around the argument and say there were less choices then than there are now.
Yeah, but did they even have
your entertainment?
Did they even have cars back then? Could you get in your motor coach and go to a game? I don't know about
that. Well, we got on the trolley, and the horse-drawn trolley.
Yeah,
and we went down to the ballpark, you know, and
tossed him a buffalo nickel, and got into what's
my goodness, young pups.
It's hard to think about it in those terms, but it really was. As of next year, the 50-year anniversary of that 1970 team, and
which 50-year anniversary of the beginning of the Big Red Machine.
Wow, and still. It's all anyone wants to talk about in Cincinnati, because it's been, with a couple of highlights here and there, it's been mostly dreary ever since. Bill?
No, I guess is the Yankees still talk about the 27 Yankees, too. Yankee fans still talk about the 27 Yankees. I mean, when you're talking about one of the best teams in the history of the game, I mean, people are going to remember that for a long, long, long time.
Absolutely, and we would still be, even if the Reds had success in the intervening years. I think the difference is that fans who were born after the Big Red Machine, or after, you know, in the last 40 years, for example, they have the Yankees fans that are born in that time span have individual teams that they feel close to, that they are memorable to them because they have different World Series winners. Whereas the Reds, if you were born after 1990, next year's going to be the 30th anniversary of that World Series, since the Reds won a World Series. You got people that really have become big baseball fans, going to be in their 30s starting next year, who don't have a team like that with Cincinnati. It's why I fear if the Reds don't do something soon, I mean, they're in danger of losing a generation or two to apathy, because it's just Yankees fans would have those special teams to them that, they'll still talk about 27 or whatever, but they've got their own team as well. Does that make sense, what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I understand exactly what you're trying to say. And I know you've made that point a number of times about losing a generation of fans. And you're not wrong at all. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, there's no sign of it changing at any time soon.
Yeah, well, maybe this year will be the year. Bill, I don't think you and I have had a chance to talk about Marty, have we? Marty Brenneman. I mean, we've talked about him a bunch over the years, but since he retired after 46 years, which is just amazing to me. And I talked with Jason some about it last week, and I've given my thoughts in various places that I've written about it. But what's your relationship to Marty in terms of Marty Brenneman in your life?
I am not, and normally I'm a pretty sentimental guy, and I'll be honest with you, I didn't get the emotion that everybody had over this. I didn't get it, especially when a lot of the same people that I read or that are now saying, "Oh, Marty, 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 Marty," were the same ones that were with me calling him just a grumpy old man a few years ago.
Oh wait, you were calling someone else a grumpy old man?
Wow. Yeah, I was.
He must have been really grumpy.
But what I'm saying is, you know, once he's retiring, they're willing to forgive all these things that they pissed them off about this guy a few years ago. And you know, to me, that's kind of hypocritical. I think he calls a great game. I think he was unfair. At times he was unfair to specific players and railed on them. And I think he's a big reason they traded out, ran Adam Dunn out of town. I believe that. But you know, my hat's off to a man for a wonderful long career, but it doesn't change my opinion. And I think he stayed too long. And once Joe was gone, he didn't. I don't think he enjoyed his job like he did before when he was with Joe. And that's just my opinion. I know I'm probably going to get raked over to calls about it, but that's the way I feel about it.
Can't you disagree with what someone says while still recognizing that they were outstanding at their job and that they have a special place in our lives because they've been sort of in the background our entire lives? Can't you? I didn't agree with him all the time, and I don't disagree.
Of course you can, but you don't go public and rip him and then say how wonderful he is a few years later just because he's retiring. To me, that's being a hypocrite.
I don't agree at all.
I mean, if you're looking for somebody you agree with all the time, you're not going to be married. You're not going to have any friends. I mean, let's be serious.
My wife agrees with me all the time.
I don't understand. No, we don't ever agree. Actually, we've agreed a couple of times today, but I just don't agree that. I didn't get the sentimentality that everybody else did, and I've been listening to baseball and the Reds baseball longer than I would bet 80 to 90% of the people that are listening to our podcast. I just don't get it. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from the man's talent and in his career and all that kind of things, but it didn't affect me the way it seems to affect a lot of different people.
Wow. You have genuinely surprised me, as you do occasionally, but you have genuinely, I'm taken aback by that hot take, Bill Lack.
I am what I am.
And that's all that you am. Bill,
me and Pop.
I think that's a good place to kind of stick a pin into this and didn't get any viewer mail this week. Didn't get a chance to do that. And we had so much news to talk about. So, we'll get back.
I wanted to do one more thing that I thought of while we were talking.
I had one more thing to do and you interrupted it, but go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No. You're my guest, Bill.
Which usually means we're done.
You're my guest. Go ahead.
You've talked on numerous occasions about changing teams, whether in jest or serious. Do you think you could really do that?
Oh, no. No way.
Okay. Because let me tell you, when I was in the CERB, when I was in the Navy, I lived in Florida. And, you know, I tried to become a Florida football fan. You know, I tried the Buccaneers because I liked them better than the Dolphins at the time. And I was stationed in North Florida, and it was before the Jaguars. And I just couldn't do it. Now, whether it was because the team wasn't in the city I was in or what, but changing teams is not an easy thing to do. Now, I've never tried it with baseball. I know I could never do it with baseball. I'll be a Reds fan till the day I die. But I'd be curious to hear from somebody that had changed teams successfully and how they were able to do it. Because I know I couldn't, especially with baseball. Heck, I'm a Bengals fan. I went to my first Bengals game in 1968 at Nippert Stadium. I think it was their fourth or fifth home game. Was October the 20th. And as much as I hate the Brown family, I can't change teams. I would love to, but I can't. And heck, there's a team 2 hours away.
No. I mean, anytime I've said that I would change teams, that's all completely in jest. There's no chance of that. But now I will say this. I do see a situation where if I think the Reds are really going to pretend they don't have the money and really not serious about competing, I would certainly take a step back from this,
yes.
from watching yep. this team and supporting this team, because it's been most of my adult life. They have not really tried. And if you know, life's too short. I'm getting tired of waiting for them to get serious. And so I could see that, but no, I mean, I'm not going to, am I going to cheer for the Pirates? You know, come on.
Yeah, and I've said this before, and I have found as I've gotten older, I've become less of a baseball fan and more of a Reds fan than just a Reds fan. And maybe I would go the other way. Maybe I'd become more of a baseball fan and not worry so much about the Reds, or maybe I would just become less interested in baseball altogether. But I understand it. I agree with exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. You just ratchet it down.
Yeah, just, you know, I can say I won't watch him again. That's not true. I mean, I'm going to watch. You know, I'll turn him on occasionally in the background, but it wouldn't be an every night thing. It'd be, I got other things to do. There's lots of movies I want to watch, lots of books I want to read, and at some point that's going to be more rewarding to me than following a franchise that is not making any effort. It's kind of like our buddy Chris Garber says. Chris is like, if you kept going to a pizza place and they kept giving you terrible service, we're making no effort to give you good service, you wouldn't keep going back to that pizza place. Why should we treat this entertainment, the Reds, which are an entertainment vehicle, essentially, why should we treat them differently than you would treat, a pizza place or a restaurant? And there's a lot of sense to that, but we do.
So. Yeah, I heard somebody say the same thing about Cubs fans years and years ago when the Cubs were terrible and they still drew fairly well. Only they used a dry cleaner as the example.
Yeah. Why would you? It's the same thing, but it's not. And somehow it deep in our souls or something. I don't know. It's different to us. So, all right, that's a place to put a pin in this one. I want to, before we get out of here, I do want to give a big time thank you. You know, I've been blown away. This is our first year at patreon.com/redlegradio, and the level of commitment from the fans that have decided to of the podcast decided to support us there. I've just been blown away by you guys. Thank you so much. Had a new patron this week at patreon.com/redlegradio, JR Davis. JR, man, thank you so much for joining up. I promise we're going to keep providing podcasts all winter long. And of course, if you're subscribed to the free feed, you know that we dropped one of our Patreon exclusive podcasts in there just to show you what you're missing if you're not a patron. And it was me and Chris talking about obscure former Reds. It was a lot of fun. We had a blast. So JR Davis, thank you so much. Now, JR Davis, what position is he?
There's fireball and left-handed starter.
No way. No way. He's a catcher. Power-hitting catcher.
No. Oh. Maybe he'll be the catcher next year. That's who they'll sign.
Ooh, JR Davis. Now, if they sign JR to play catcher, yeah, I'm all in. I'm all in on the Reds. All right. You know, we can go through all the stuff we always do. Subscribe to the podcast everywhere you get your podcasts. We're at redlegnation.com. You know where to find us at this point. If you wanted to help support us through the off season, we're going to have a lot of fun stuff at patreon.com/redlegradio. But stay tuned to us here. This podcast will be going to be here all winter long. And I do think that we're going to have a lot to talk. If the first week of this off season is any indication, we're going to have a lot to talk about. Bill, any final thoughts?
Thanks, everybody, for listening.
For Bill Lack and Mookie Betts, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app, and join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.